Welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. I am Christopher Harris, the gaffer, and I'm joined today, yet again, by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, how are things in Fort Lauderdale, Coral Springs area?
They are fine. A lot of shock about some soccer developments in the last few days, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, definitely. So World Soccer Talk podcast, for those of you who haven't had a chance to listen, it's the only show out there that talks about watching soccer on TV, online, and via apps. And we take a close look at the way that soccer is covered on television, online, and streaming, etc. And Kartik, last episode, we talked about the U.S. men's national team and how we thought that Jurgen Klinsmann, whether people liked him as a coach or not, was having some negative impacts, most importantly on TV ratings, attendance numbers, and also we assumed too that there was some pressure probably from some of the sponsors in terms of some of these negative results and some of that impact that was having on their brands. And lo and behold, Sunil Gulati makes a decision yesterday, which was announced on Monday, to sack Jurgen Klinsmann. What are your initial thoughts about the news?
Yeah, I think it was overdue, quite frankly. I mean, I think he's been a spent force for 18 months now. The results have not just been bad in a recent context for the United States. They've been bad in a historical context. Worst qualifying loss since 1957. First loss on home soil to Mexico in a qualifier since 1972. First time ever losing to a Caribbean nation in a Gold Cup. First time the U.S. was outshot in all three group stage games in a Gold Cup, and that was to Honduras, Haiti, and Panama. It wasn't to the Titans of world football. So I think this has been coming for a long time. That having been said, I find the timing somewhat curious. Sandwiched in between a feature on 60 Minutes about the U.S. women's national team and their disastrous pay and a new collective bargaining agreement with U.S. soccer. Sunil Gulati refused to be interviewed for that feature on 60 Minutes, so that was beamed to homes across the United States, one of the top-rated programs in the country, the top-rated news program in the country. For those of you listening in Britain, it's like Panorama, at least in terms of its scope, its viewership. So that was Sunday night, and then Tuesday night, we know Ryan Gumbel over at Sports on HBO is doing a feature on the USSF and Chuck Blazer. So the sacking coming on a Monday in between the two, to me, is quite surprising. Not surprising. I think the sacking was long overdue. I support the sacking. I think Klinsmann, the people who supported Jurgen Klinsmann were in love with the idea of what they thought Jurgen Klinsmann was. I don't think anyone who objectively watches football could think that he is a good manager, has done a good job of man management or tactical management of this national team. And he's also a master at deflection, a master at throwing his players under the bus, that sort of thing. But to me, the timing is a little bit curious. Why wasn't this done late last week? Why wasn't it done later this week? I think it's because of those two television-related investigative reports that I mentioned.
Possibly. And we should note to listeners, too, that so at the time of this recording, it's Tuesday morning. So we haven't seen the HBO documentary yet on Real Sports, which is supposed to be mostly on Chuck Blazer. But it does kind of look at his path all the way from starting out as a youth soccer coach, Chuck Blazer, through the USSF I think, executive vice president, working all his way up into CONCACAF and FIFA. We'll have to wait and see what happens during that documentary, how detailed they get. It's probably going to be a shorter segment. It's not going to be the full hour, so it may only be about, say, 10 to 15 minutes. And has an interview with, I believe, his fiance or his girlfriend. So we shall see. But the other thing, too, so about Klinsmann, we'll get more into this a little bit later, because both Kartik and I looked at the way that the Klinsmann sacking was covered by U.S. soccer media, specifically television, and we'll take a look and see kind of who kind of did the best job and who kind of failed in that regard, and some of the issues that we have as a soccer viewing public in the United States. So Kartik, let's move on to the first segment, and that's what we've been watching. this past week. I'll start off and talk about the match I watched on Friday, which is the Bundesliga game between Bayer Leverkusen and RB Leipzig. And this was a really entertaining match for anyone who missed it. It was within, I think, 4 minutes, there were two goals. And Leverkusen scored first, Leipzig came back. And it was really an end-to-end game, back and forth, just great action, a great spectacle to watch. And Leipzig eventually won the match 3-2 late on. But from a TV perspective, from a kind of a soccer media perspective, Keith Costigan had the commentary. He was doing a solo commentary. And I really thought that he did a fantastic job. Sometimes it's really difficult to do a solo commentary. We've heard them before on FA Cup matches where you have like usually kind of one commentator doing the entire match rather than kind of your commentator and co-commentator. But Costigan did a great job, and I think it's one of those, he's one of those unsung heroes at Fox Sports. You don't hear him that much about, but as somebody who puts in hard work week in, week out, and definitely knows his stuff.
Yeah, he certainly does, and I think he's becoming more and more comfortable with the Bundesliga and well-versed in the Bundesliga, as Fox is now in year two of their package, rights package, global rights package with the Bundesliga, which the American Fox, News Corp affiliate here of Fox, is showing. Red Bull Leipzig, obviously, RB Leipzig, one of the stories of the year in world football, and it's something to explore in another show or article. RB Leipzig, I think, it typifies and embodies all the contradictions in world football right now, both bad and good. Some of my concerns about exploitation, corporate exploitation of clubs, you can see in RB Leipzig, but that at the same time, the only way a team from the old East Germany in the kind of economic condition that region is in can compete is to have a sugar daddy come in and do what Red Bull has done with Leipzig. And then, of course, there is also the great story because it is Leipzig and it is East Germany, the former East Germany, where teams have not been competitive since reunification in 1990 and have been even less competitive in the last decade. So there are all these inherent contradictions, and that's just scratching the surface, that conflict me when I watch RB Leipzig. Should I support them? Should I support those fans in Leipzig who've never had top-flight football and now have this dynamic team and have seen a manufactured team, a team that's younger than most teams in Major League Soccer, in fact, climb the ranks like this? Or should I be opposed to it because it's a corporate club and they've exploited the system so much? And so I have to admit, Chris, I'm fascinated by RB Leipzig. I'm following them very closely for all these reasons. I'm not a fan, but there's a lot to study in them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of those things that people take different things from games. So for me personally, I'm just watching it for just the pure enjoyment of watching just great football. But there's definitely the political aspect, and there's definitely kind of the business side of things. That one, for this particular story, I'm tending to ignore. But I really enjoyed the match. It was a great match to watch. How about you, Kartik? What have you been watching this past week?
Well, I watched, obviously, the Premier League, the West Ham Spurs game. I thought NBC did a knock-up job in another London derby. The big question mark now is about West Ham and just that entire club and the drift of that club. But Arlo White, Lee Dixon, Graham Wilson, they all did a very credible job. And then when you look at how NBC Studio was structured this weekend, Kyle Martino is back. From his he's now a daddy, and Robbie Musto, some very good points. They were on point. It was probably one of their better weekends in the studio this weekend. Also watched Robbie Earle's documentary or a Premier League download on Claudio Ranieri again. They aired it again, and it was it really is fascinating. I think they did such a good job with exploring Ranieri's mind and his thought process and how he makes decisions. It wasn't just, hey, here was Leicester. It was a great story. They won the title. Type of thing. And Ranieri, who had been the nearly man, who had second place finishes in four different leagues, he won a title. There was a lot more in depth to it. It was, It was a lot like kind of a television version for me of Alex Ferguson's book Leading, which he put out a year and a half ago, which is a lot of life lessons and business lessons and leadership lessons from football management. It wasn't a book about football per se, and I got a lot from this Ranieri documentary. So those are two of the things I've been watching this weekend.
Yeah, for me, it was a weekend. Actually, my kids had AYSO and travel games, so I didn't get a chance to watch much Premier League matches, except for a little bit here and a little bit there. But I did watch the Milan derby, another great game, Inter Milan and AC Milan, and some great commentary, too, by Andres Cordero and Matteo Bonetti. And I think both of those, as a partnership, continue to improve. I thought they did a great job with the commentary, and I thought they brought a lot to the game in terms of kind of their knowledge, Bonetti especially, in terms of the game, the players, etc. And again, a great ending to the game, thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah, that was a great game, especially considering the Milan derby has lost a lot of its luster recently, with both sides struggling. And also the farewell tribute to Berlusconi, if it is in fact farewell, was I thought pretty touching, even though he's far from my favorite person or the favorites of most people I suspect who are listening. I also watched, Chris, and I know we might get deeper into this as we talk about the Jurgen Klinsmann issue, I also watched the 60 Minutes feature with the U.S. Women's National Team with great interest, and found it to be very compelling. At the same time, it's an incomplete picture because Sunil Gulati, the president of the United States Soccer Federation, refused to be interviewed on camera for the feature. So it wasn't meant to be a slanted piece, but it somewhat came off that way, even though there were some very hard questions that 60 Minutes does ask. And then the other thing I watched this week was all the Klinsmann coverage, and we'll get to that later in the show.
Yeah, and last but not least, I watched the Madrid derby, Atleti against Real Madrid. Atleti was completely outclassed in this one. Real Madrid was absolutely incredible. Just some of the plays they scored from, and again, great. I love Phil Shane. I love Ray Hudson, and I thought they were great together doing the commentary. So, Kartik, let's move on to the next segment, which is TV streaming news, and I'll go first. And that's this is actually not brand new news, but I do have some additional information to add to it. So, recently, currently, the FA Cup TV rights and streaming rights are up for bidding overseas. Overseas being outside the United Kingdom. And that's something that's happening right now is that several weeks ago is that IMG, which is kind of a large media company, they went ahead and bought the rights from the FA, the Football Association in England, for $1 billion. So they have the rights now, IMG, to go ahead and shop the FA Cup around the world, which includes the United States. So right now Fox Sports has the rights to it. From what I understand, Fox Sports is trying to renew those rights and through IMG to continue showing the FA Cup for a few more years. With that, of course, there's probably going to be some other bidders in this process. And I would imagine that NBC Sports would be one of those, because to me, the FA Cup is a perfect complement to Premier League coverage. I mean, throughout the entire calendar, there are a few weeks in the calendar where there's no Premier League games, and that's usually because of FA Cup matches, usually third round in early January, etc. So I would imagine that NBC Sports would put in a good bid for this one. I'll be curious to see how the rights change, if at all, in terms of how the FA Cup is covered. Because to me, the FA Cup is still a little bit in the Stone Age in terms of television. Not every game has TV coverage. The FA Cup, to me, is really missing kind of a whip-around show, especially in the third round, to be able to kind of go from ground to ground to ground to see kind of all the goals going in from like some of these non-league teams. So it'll be interesting to see if IMG's and the FA are able to kind of offer a better package, and it'll be interesting to see if Fox does renew the rights or if NBC Sports or somebody else does go in and try to take them away from Fox.
Yeah, that's a very good question and a very curious. It's going to be very curious to see how this plays out, because I think the FA Cup fits NBC better, both in terms of their coverage of English football and also the fact that they have programming slots open. There's been a lot of frustration expressed by fans of the English game here in the U.S. who love the third round of the FA Cup and love the replays and love the fourth round, that too many of the games have been dumped to Fox Sports 2 or Fox Soccer Plus, and that because of college basketball season and whatever other programming commitments Fox Sports has, that the games tend to be bumped and there doesn't seem to be a high priority on the tournament. That having been said, in the later rounds, Fox does a pretty good job. When you get to the semifinals and the finals, they do a very good job of covering the FA Cup. It's just that third round, which for junkies, and I don't know if it's just a small niche, it might be, but those junkies are dissatisfied with the way Fox covers third and fourth round of the FA Cup. So that's a big question. The other question, honestly, though, is will the Cup itself be reformed? Will there be replays will there be an elimination of replays at some earlier stages? That's always in play. And will there be an effort made by the Football League and the Premier League, but it seems like the Football League is taking the lead on this, to push the FA Cup into becoming midweek games, midweek fixtures, midweek ties, just like the League Cup. And if that's the case, because the Football League is losing a couple weekends a year and they're trying to cram a 46-game schedule into a defined calendar, which begins the first weekend of August and ends at the end of April or the first week of May. Remember, they have playoffs after that in the Football League, so they have to end a little earlier than the Premier League. They're trying to fit eight more games, league games, in the Premier League is in roughly the same period. There is some talk that the Football League, not some talk, there's intense talk that the Football League is going to try and push the FA to move the FA Cup dates. Or if they take a winter break, that third round of the FA Cup goes bye-bye till another day. So all of that's on the table, and the television rights are hanging out there at the same time as this.
Yeah, lots of implications in terms of how this may change or how it may stay the same. It could stay as we know it in terms of the way that the actual tournament is run, in terms of having the replays, and it also could stay the same with Fox continuing to have the coverage. But right now, everything's open, so we shall see what happens in the coming weeks or coming months.
Yeah, and moving on to our next news item, DirecTV Now, which we've talked about the last few weeks on the show, it's set for a launch of November 28th, which is less than a week from our recording time. It's next Monday. First off, let's give you the good news. Most of the programs on DirecTV launch will be available for replay within a 72-hour window after the broadcast. So it will work like an on-demand streaming service, which is what it's meant to be. However, for ESPN... And this is a big caveat. ESPN always plays by their own rules, and they get higher carriage fees and all this sorts of stuff. Only live programming is available, and that's going to be very inconvenient for people who are used to streaming things, but streaming at their convenience. Now, you can still use the Watch ESPN app, which, if you have DirecTV credentials, you'll be able to log into to get on-demand games. I have to say, though, I've had some issues with Watch ESPN with live broadcast of Major League Soccer games, Major League Soccer playoff games, and the final 2 weeks of the regular season when they did the all the start times were at the same kickoff time. I had some real issues with logging in to watch ESPN and watching those games, which were live on ESPN channels. Yet, if I wanted to flip to something else, like an NASL game, which was just an ESPN3 broadcast, or a game from another soccer league that was just an ESPN3 broadcast, I was let in without any problems. So there are still some kicks in the Watch ESPN universe. It's not quite as user-friendly as NBC Sports Live Extra. It is more user-friendly than Fox Sports Go, but there are some issues with it. So good luck to those of you that get DirecTV Now, because I think you're going to like the product other than maybe ESPN. And that's I know that's a big bugaboo for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and that's a kind of the big dirty secret, I think, about streaming in general across the board, is that none of it's perfect. So whether it's PlayStation View, they've had issues with streaming not working at certain times. You go down the list, NBC Sports Live NBC Sports app is what it's called now. Sometimes I've had issues with that not working. Sling, same thing with that too. Fox, you name it. there seems to be issues. And a lot of it is technical sometimes, or somebody just forgetting to kind of make the switch in terms of making sure that the game's available. But I think as each month goes on and it gets better and better and these issues become less and less. So we're still not quite there with having TV be perfect in terms of its coverage, but we're getting closer and closer to it. Speaking of Sling, Sling Blue has added two new channels to its streaming service. So Sling Blue is the one that offers Fox, kind of all the Fox channels, FS1, FS2, Fox Sports Net, as well as NBCSN. Well, Sling Blue has added two channels, and those are alternate channels. So it's NBC Alternate 1, NBCSN Alternate 1, and NBCSN Alternate 2. So what those are overflow channels. So, for example, for a typical Saturday, we're watching Premier League matches at 10 o'clock in the morning. You got your main match on NBCSN. Maybe you got a second match that's on USA or CNBC. Now with Sling Blue, there's going to be two of the other matches that you would normally be on, well, still continue to be on NBC Sports app. You can now get on Sling Blue. So that just increases the amount of Premier League coverage that you can get. Sling Blue still does not give you access to NBC Sports app. PlayStation View does, but I think they're working towards that, but I haven't heard anything yet. But anyway, so in terms of Premier League fans that have Sling Blue, just additional coverage now that you'll be able to watch some matches that previously you wouldn't have been able to. So Kartik, let's move on to our next segment, which is soccer TV ratings. And like I mentioned before too, we are recording this now on a Tuesday morning. Most of the TV ratings, actually all of the TV ratings for the Saturday matches haven't come in yet, as well as the Sunday matches. The Saturday match, the big one was there were two, right? There was the Spurs against West Ham on NBC, and then there was the Dortmund-Bayern Munich game on Big Fox. So we'll have to wait and see kind of what those numbers are. As we get them, we'll post those on worldsoccertalk.com later this week. But so we have the numbers for Friday. And Friday often gets overlooked because it's usually kind of quieter games that are on. But we do have the TV ratings that have come in for the Leverkusen match against Leipzig, the one I talked about before. And that was on Fox Sports 2 on Friday. The viewing number for that was 20,000. And that's absolutely abysmal. Which is a shame, too, because like Leipzig went to the top of the table with that game. And we finally have an actual Bundesliga title race where it's open. It's not Bayern Munich running away with it, but 20,000. Let me put that in context too. So there were a couple other matches that played at the same time that were shown. Brighton against Aston Villa was on beIN Sports, the English version, English language version. That had 15,000. And then we had on the beIN Sports and Espanol, the Spanish language channel, we had Real Betis against Las Palmas. And that had 19,000. So at the same time, two lesser matches on beIN channels almost beat the Bundesliga game on FS2. What are your thoughts, Kartik?
Well, I've always thought that if beIN marketed the championship more, because there's so many big clubs now in the championship, the Leeds United, the Aston Villas, the Newcastle for this season only probably, but those sorts of clubs, even Derby Forest or some residual support, they would have better television ratings. It seems like this was a Villa game, and they were going up, and there was a pocket of Brighton fans in the United States also, I should mention, going up against a Bundesliga game between two corporate clubs, right? It's surprising because beIN is in a lot less households than Fox Sports 2, and they're showing a second division, but they've essentially got the same rating. Statistically, those are the same things. Those are the same numbers.
Yeah, and Chicharito. I mean, you got Chicharito who didn't play the full match, came on, I think it was about 15 or 20 minutes to go in the game, so he played. The game wasn't shown on Fox Deportes. It was played. I mean, it's a Friday afternoon. It's it was like a 2:30 Eastern kickoff. So most people are at work. But still, you would expect, especially with, even with the Chicharito effect, that number would be much larger. The championship, I think, is doing much better this year on beIN Sports than it did last year, probably helped definitely by Aston Villa, but most importantly by Newcastle United and all the supporters that they have in the US. But generally speaking, it's just disappointing from the Bundesliga. You would expect these types of matches to be doing much better. There's a lot of American sports journalists that have been pushing the Bundesliga pretty hard, I think basically in opposition to the Premier League, and it's just doesn't seem to be working. On the other hand, when Fox does put those Bundesliga games on Big Fox, yes, it gets big numbers, but not as big as you would expect. So I don't know. With the Bundesliga, it just seems weird. I don't know if it's a cultural fit or if it's just that there's too much soccer it's hard for even hardcore soccer fans to watch all the major leagues. I enjoy it personally. I love watching the Bundesliga. I think it's very entertaining. The level of football is great. The atmosphere is wonderful. But for whatever reason, there just seems to be kind of a split. It's not getting to... I mean, most American soccer fans aren't getting into it for whatever reason.
Yeah. We've talked about this topic ad nauseum on our site over the course of the last 18 months since Fox began broadcasting the Bundesliga. It's just not happening for them. And the ratings gap between the Premier League and the Bundesliga are as wide as ever in this country. And the general interest in both leagues is as wide as ever. Now, we've talked about Premier League ratings going down, like all soccer ratings and all sports ratings are going down. I guess I should preface this, and I know you've had to in writing, Chris. When I say MLS ratings are stagnant or are gone down, I'm excluding those Fox over the air broadcasts that have conveniently spiked the number for this season. But that they did not have those over-the-air broadcasts last season. So in reality, the number hasn't improved. So soccer broadcasts in general, the numbers are stagnant or going down for television ratings-wise. But the Bundesliga never even got out of the box, so I guess there's no place right. for it to go but up, right?
Right, exactly.
Looking at it.
Exactly. And so far this season, before this past weekend, because we don't have those numbers yet, the Bundesliga is averaging 68,000 viewers per game. And again, too, a lot of it, too, is because some of those games are on FS2, which gets a lot lower numbers. But also that includes games that are on Big Fox, too. So kind of averaging out 68,000 is definitely disappointing. But it is what it is. And we talked about this last week on last week's show, too, is that whether the U.S. men's national team is having a negative impact, not just on TV viewing figures for the U.S. national team, as well as attendance numbers, but across the board from top down throughout. It's harder for, I think, casual mainstream sports fans to get into soccer if the U.S. national team is not playing, fighting for the flag, or playing as well as they could, or representing the U.S. in a positive way. And I think when the national team does well, that creates more soccer fans. And that drips down into the Bundesliga, into Premier League, into MLS, into all the different types of soccer, is that those numbers will grow as the U.S. national team does better. U.S. national team wins the World Cup, all of a sudden, overnight, there's millions of new soccer fans just created. But we're still far, far, far away from that. But still, I think it's one of those things that the Klinsmann sacking, whether you agree with it or not, it's one of those things that it may actually have a bit of a positive impact in the future that may not be felt for another year or two, but is a positive step in the right direction in terms of the growth of the sport in this country. So Kartik, let's move on to the next segment, which is our listener mailbag. And I'll go ahead and read this one. This is from a reader or listener named Scott from McAllen, Texas. And he says that one thing that I rarely hear you guys mention is Liga MX. It's very popular down here in Texas, especially when it pertains to competing with MLS. And it says that oftentimes Liga MX is easier to access to watch than MLS. I was excited last year to see a 2015 CONCACAF Champions League playoff as all of... Liga MX versus Major League Soccer. Then I was disgusted to see all of the Liga MX teams beat the MLS teams. I was also disgusted to see half-filled MLS stadiums in that playoff, then to see them travel to a packed and rabid Liga MX stadium. It's frustrating because MLS likes to look up to European leagues, yet they can't compete with Liga MX. Kartik, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, first off, Scott, I hope you've been attending your local team's games down in McAllen. The Rio Grande Valley club in USL had a very good season. Unfortunately, defeated in the playoffs by Oklahoma City Energy and a bit of an upset. But hopefully you're watching some local soccer there with a very good USL team. But I agree with him on Liga MX. I mean, I think the television ratings speak for itself. The quality of the league speaks for itself. I think that there is some... there's some disconnect within English language audiences and that that specific league. But, you know, as you look at how things are evolving, more and more American fans are paying attention to Liga MX because of the number of Americans down there and also just a greater awareness of CONCACAF and what MLS faces within CONCACAF. And MLS has not been able to beat Liga MX teams at the knockout stage of the CONCACAF Champions League, which remains a big problem and a big sore point with a lot of fans of the league and a lot of proponents of the league, that they can't get overcome this hurdle. So, yeah, I agree with this comment.
Yeah, and also to note, too, that this week, I got Wednesday and Thursday, the Liga MX quarterfinal playoffs for the Apertura. So we got, actually, I think Chivas is playing Club America. I mean, there's some big games going on. So, and that's the other thing about Liga MX, it is more accessible. I mean, it's on, most of the games are on Univision or Univision Deportes, as well as Telemundo, NBC Universo. But in terms of accessing those matches, the numbers reflect that, too. I mean, there's definitely a ton of people that are interested in Liga MX, and they're not all Mexican-Americans. There's a lot of... a lot of different ethnicities that watch it because it's an entertaining league. But as news comes along, we'll be sure to share that Liga MX news on this show. So Kartik, the last segment of the show this week is our feature topic, and that is how well or how not so well the leading sports networks responded to the breaking soccer news about Jurgen Klinsmann getting fired. And really, this is kind of one of the biggest soccer stories that have happened in the United States, arguably since 2014 World Cup. It's a huge story. And maybe let's go through kind of just personally speaking in terms of how you heard about the news and what you found when you kind of searched around the TV channels when the news was announced to see what you found.
Well, I was in the Fort Lauderdale Strikers office, and we were about to have a staff meeting about some serious ownership issues with the club. And about 3:15 Eastern, one of the staff members screamed, "Jurgen Klinsmann's been sacked." And I thought, well, everything is speculative right now. And sure enough, my phone started beeping with breaking news alerts and text messages he had been sacked. So the instant reaction was, while we're gathering for the staff meeting, get the television on, flip, and try and get some coverage of the sacking. And instead, you turn on ESPN, they're talking about football, college football in the NFL or something like that. And Fox, same thing. Fox Sports 1. NBC is in the middle of the first half of the Burnley-West Brom game, which gave them a bit of an advantage to talk about it at halftime. But BN is showing a taped Serie A game. Univision Deportes was showing something else. There was no breaking news mechanism. So then you just revert back to Twitter. And then you wait for maybe tape segments on FoxSoccer.com and ESPNFC.com. ESPNFC doing a much better job. And eventually you saw Taylor Twellman, Doug McIntyre, Jeff Carlisle, Casey Keller, Shaka Hislop, who's been a vicious critic of Klinsmann for a long time now and seemed to be doing a victory lap. Shaka and Craig Burley doing their thing. But that took some hours, right? It didn't happen right away. We'd expect to see ESPN in the studio right away, Dan Thomas in special report, bringing in Twellman via satellite from Montreal, sitting with Shaka, Shaka's critiques of Klinsmann, all of which seem to mirror my critiques of Klinsmann. I generally agree with Shaka Hislop on most things, and certainly we have on Klinsmann, but Shaka giving the case why this, in his mind, was overdue and should have happened a year or 18 months ago, Craig Burley giving his account. We should have been seeing that at 3:30. Instead, we saw it at 5:30, whenever it came on.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too. In many times, in many ways, we kind of talk about how far soccer has come in this, you know, United States, in this country, in terms of all the coverage that we get, you know, across all the networks and streaming, etc., and you name it. But in many ways, this story kind of gave us a good example of how far we've got to go. And really, if you think about it, if this was, I don't know, and again, I don't know much about NFL, I don't watch it that closely, but if this was a major, one of the major coaches that got fired, maybe the Cowboys coach or something like that, you could guarantee that on every single sports network, they'd be breaking into the coverage to have kind of a live reporter or at least a ticker across the bottom breaking news. This would be major, major news. This is the U.S. national team. And it was almost invisible. So I heard about it. Well, actually, I was watching the West Brom Burnley game on NBCSN, and had my laptop with me. I was kind of watching it at the same time too. And then I popped an email from US Soccer announcing that Klinsmann had been fired. And in that first half on NBCSN, they didn't have any ticker on the bottom, so you had to wait till the end of that first half. And as soon as it ended, they came on and said, hey, Klinsmann's been fired, and we'll have some analysis and coverage of that at halftime. Luckily for NBCSN, Carlo Martino was one of the analysts, and he did a great job in terms of kind of sharing his thoughts and his opinions about the news. But so I flipped. At the same time, I had all the other channels on FS1, had Undisputed, a rerun of that. And I was expecting, I know they're talking about NFL, but I was expecting them to at least have a ticker across the bottom, breaking news, Klinsmann's been sacked, but nothing. And then right after that, I think they had Speak for Yourself. And I wasn't able to tell if that was a rerun or if that was live. But again, nothing about Klinsmann, nothing at all. So for FS1, Fox Sports 1, I mean, to me, is it really a sports network? Yes, it is, of course, because it carries the major sports and focuses in on NFL and basketball, etc. But essentially, the Klinsmann news is basically extinct from Fox Sports 1. Now, today, Tuesday, we're going to have, I'm sure, on the Champions League coverage, probably most of the Champions League coverage is going to be focused on Klinsmann and what this means for U.S. soccer and Bruce Arena, and probably very little, actually, pre-game coverage about the Champions League, which is what they're supposed to be covering. But it is a big story, so I completely understand. But from FS1's perspective, it was invisible. ESPN, same thing, too. ESPN at least had a ticker on the crawl, on the bottom of the screen, kind of talking about breaking news, Klinsmann's been fired, as they went on to talk about NFL and all sorts of other things. And you're right, Kartik, and being sports too, they had reruns of Serie A matches and League One matches. I'm sure later on Monday night they would have had the extra show or the locker room, and that they would have at least discussed the topic. But overall, I was just really kind of thinking to myself, I'm like, major news, and I mean luckily for NBCSN, timing wise, it was good for them, but otherwise, this news would have been completely invisible unless you were a hardcore soccer fan on social media or on websites. It's just crazy.
Yeah, one thing I will concede on this is that ESPN did understand the gravity of the news, and they had these regularly scheduled football programs. Now, I'm disappointed they didn't break in and go right to the studio and have Dan Thomas ready with Shaka and Craig Burley and Taylor Twellman and whoever else, but and Jeff Carlisle and Doug McIntyre, who reported on this national team, and they did have them for the ESPN FC show, both those guys, and for clips on the website. But they did have it big in red in bold letters on the corner, in the left-hand corner of the screen at the top, while this American football program was on. Jurgen Klinsmann sacked or fired as a U.S. men's national team manager, and the breaking news on the bottom with their crawl, Jurgen Klinsmann sacked. So they at least acknowledged it had happened and that it was a major story. Fox didn't even do that, but I think the ratings for Fox Sports 1 haven't been very, very good in general. They've been disappointing. The network is now 3.5 years old. And we know they've gone to a lot of tape programs and just cheap production programs during the day. And given the economics of what's happening in the cable business and Fox Sports 1's own struggles and Fox Sports 2's even greater struggles, I can understand why they didn't have Rob Stone or Eric Rinaldo or somebody ready to discuss this, or Alexi Lalas. Their perspective would have been Rinaldo's in particular. Rinaldo is not a great fan of Klinsmann either. Yeah. Would have been very good, but unfortunately, no, they weren't ready, any of these networks, to do it. And I guess Kyle Martino got the spotlight because he happened to be on in the studio. Yep. For this game. They rotate, and there's a 33.3% chance Martino wouldn't have been there because they rotate those three guys, right?
Right, right. And actually, in Fox's defense, too, so most of that crew, the soccer crew that they have in terms of the analysts that they have, were en route to Seattle, I believe, for the MLS coverage of tonight's game.
So, yeah, they've got that game, and ESPN has the Montreal-Toronto game, which is why Twellman and Doug McIntyre were both in Montreal already, and they were able to talk to them there. Casey Keller was in Seattle. Casey Keller, by the way, seems to, at least on the relative scale, have been a Klinsmann defender based on his comments yesterday. As usual, Shaka Hislop was the leader of the drum beat against Klinsmann, but I was surprised. Craig Burley, who used to defend Klinsmann, basically said, hey, these last few results, I mean, those results weren't good enough. You get sacked when you have results like that, and he wasn't defending him at all. But it would have been good to have that coverage immediately. And so what ended up happening is we ended up waiting, and I think there was more reaction on Twitter than you would normally have. This is great for Twitter, though. Mm-hmm. It drives the conversation because people are frustrated. They can't get the immediate snap reaction. It seems like some journalists have their articles written already. Namely Sam Borden, who had gotten the scoop the previous day from talking to Klinsmann, and our old colleague at World Soccer Talk, Ryan Rosenblatt. He had a article that seemed like prepackaged for Fox Soccer. But other than that, it wasn't a whole lot of there wasn't a whole lot of even newspaper style or web news type stories that came out on it, other than just a breaking news crawl and the Twitter reaction for an hour or two. And that's not the way the world works now, is it?
Right. Exactly. And as a whole, it's disappointing because it just gives a perfect example of how much of a hole there is in terms of soccer news coverage. Yes, ESPN has ESPN FC every night, which is great. I mean, that's a great way to kind of discuss the topics and have analysts on, etc. Then you have beIN Sports, which has the extra and have their nightly shows. Again, another great way to kind of bring viewers up to date on what's happening within the soccer world. But the two big ones, Fox and NBCSN, have no daily soccer show. So the only way that they really can talk about soccer is by kind of including it in their regular soccer coverage and just trying to merge it all together. NBCSN was extremely lucky because if this news had broken after the West Brom-Burnley match, the next time that NBCSN probably would have covered this news would have been Saturday, 5 days later. Luckily for them, it happened right in the first half. That's another issue, I think, from the NBCSN side, is that, yes, they would have the online coverage on the digital side, on their app and the website, but on the TV perspective, they're lightweight, extremely lightweight on soccer news coverage, as is Fox. I mean, Fox has had how many different versions of different soccer news shows? Some of them we loved going back into the Fox Soccer Channel, and it just had like two or three different versions, and now where we are today, which is basically the Champions League show becomes their their weekly soccer news show rather than a daily. Yeah, and then I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to ratings. It comes down to, if you have a daily soccer show, is that generating the viewers that you need to basically be able to pay the bills and get your sponsors? I guess the other thing, Kartik, too, is just one more thing about this, is that the last time a big story like this happened really was kind of the FIFA scandal, kind of all the corruption and all the DOJ findings and arrests, etc. And that was a perfect example of, at that time, ESPN's news gathering organization, investigative journalists, news reporters, that they could lean on and have these folks come on air and be on air for hours, versus Fox, which really had no one. I mean, other than maybe Rob Stone, you'd have him come on and read from the teleprompter. And I think today it's even worse than that, too. I mean, you look at Fox and you kind of say, okay, well, maybe Rachel Bonetta was available, but she's definitely not your hard-hitting news person. Definitely she's more kind of your fun and kind of millennial type of person that's going to do some videos that are going to be laughing, like the joke videos, but she's not your hard-hitting, serious news person. ESPN has that, but for whatever reason, they didn't pull those people in yesterday for that news coverage.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. When the FIFA sting was announced in May of 2015, ESPN almost immediately had the ability to really to do a good job with that, and the ability to spend hours on air with Bob Lee and Jeremy Schapp, both of whom were about as knowledgeable about the inner workings and nuances of FIFA as any journalist around the globe, save a couple of investigative journalists in the UK, right? Newspaper journalists. So as far as television journalists, I think Jeremy Schapp has no equal in terms of his knowledge of what had gone on in FIFA, even when you compare him to journalists at ITV and BBC and Sky Sports, Sky News in the UK. So they were uniquely equipped to deal with that. This go-around, though, I guess what we found is so many of the people who cover the U.S. men's national team are not and cover it from a beat perspective and an everyday kind of thought process perspective are internet journalists. They're not television journalists. I think, as I mentioned, Alexi Lalas, Eric Winalda, Taylor Twellman, they're all former U.S. national team players. They all have some sort of insight to give. Twellman, as I've said repeatedly on this show and in print, to me is far and away the best commentator of the game in the United States, best American voice. So he will always add more perspective than the other guys I mentioned. And that's no shot at them. It's just they're not Taylor Twellman. He's, right. He's the best in the business. But they still don't cover the national team to the extent that some of these other figures do. So I was glad ESPN worked McIntyre and Carlisle in yesterday. I thought that was good. What Fox needed to do was work in the people that they have with FoxSoccer.com, which has recently gone through a reboot. Ryan Rosenblatt, Caitlin Murray, others, and have them on delivering this breaking news. But they didn't do that. And NBC has a website where Joe Prince Wright basically reports on everything. He might have been equipped to discuss the Klinsmann issue on air, but again, they didn't react quickly enough to get him on for the halftime of that Burnley game. So that's a disappointment. But the journalists who cover the U.S. men's national team regularly, well, actually, let me take a step back. Fox does have Grant Wall, and they could have brought him on air somehow. So actually, scratch what I said about Fox. They have a guy who covers the team closely, who I always think of as SI.com, but he works for Fox also. But Grant Wall, Steve Goff, Ives Galarsep, on and on and on, our friend Neil Blackman, these people who cover the national team day in and day out as kind of a primary beat. And they cover MLS teams also, and they cover the Premier League, whatever. But that's kind of a primary beat for these guys. Michael Lewis is another guy, Big Apple Soccer. Those are the types of people you wanted to enhance the coverage. Because what you see with news events and what you see with the way they cover American sports is that they get these outside – they have contractual agreements with their talent, right? And they have more talent that they retain than for soccer. But they bring on these experts about this stuff. Or during the election, CNN and MSNBC and Fox News bring on their panel of experts. We didn't get that kind of coverage of the Klinsmann situation. We haven't gotten that kind of coverage of the U.S. women's national team CBA with 60 Minutes. We have not, after the 60 Minutes feature, I doubt we'll get that kind of analysis of what Brian Gumbel is going to do tonight with HBO about the U.S. Soccer Federation and Chuck Blazer. So that's disappointing. I mean, we think we've advanced so far in this country because we have so many live games on television, right?
Right.
And so we think, well, we have it better than anyone else in the world. Well, yesterday was a reminder that we don't, because if the national team manager just got sacked in England, Sam Allardyce, wall-to-wall coverage analysis, maybe overkill. Mm-hmm. But here, when this sort of thing happens much rarer fashion, and as I've said, and people like Chaka Hislop have said, Jurgen Klinsmann has skated by for 18 months, which is why one of the primary points of discussion that Twellman and Hislop and McIntyre and Carlisle had on and Burley on ESPN was, why now? Why wasn't he fired 18 months ago? Chaka, you've been saying he should have been sacked after losing to Jamaica. Why now? That became part of the discussion point. But the point is, this happens so rarely in the United States. When it happens, it's almost a bigger deal than when it happens when England manager gets sacked, because that happens all the time.
Right.
And the networks just didn't react the way we had hoped they would. And it was a real wake-up call to some of us who think that everything – that we have so much coverage here and everything is so is going along so well, and that we live in our soccer bubble, not realizing when we turn on the television hoping to get some sort of coverage of this momentous event in U.S. soccer history, recent history, mm-hmm. that we're getting subjected to some American football coverage or baseball coverage or basketball coverage, everything but what we were looking for.
Yeah, I think it's also a wake-up call to Fox, because I would assume that Grant Wall was probably traveling, which is probably why they couldn't pull him on air and have him come on to talk about it. Or maybe he was available, but they just didn't want to kind of break into kind of the reruns of Undisputed or Speak for Yourself, and thought, okay, let's just save this for Tuesday for the Champions League coverage, and then bring Grant in then. But to me, it's a wake-up call, because I mean, Fox has the rights to the World Cup, and in Russia and in Qatar, and in Russia especially, in terms of the amount of the distances that be traveled, you need a whole team of Grant Walls in order to actually cover that tournament perfectly, in terms of all the different things that could be happening. And Fox is not equipped for that. I mean, ESPN is. ESPN has kind of that news gathering, investigative journalism side of things, while Fox does not. And Grant's more of kind of your celebrity type of some investigative, but more of a journalist rather than kind of a investigative reporter. And I think that's just something that on the Fox side, I would hope that they would kind of try to look and see, okay, maybe this, I don't know, Gab McCarty or somebody, some of those types of individuals that are more hard-hitting, that we can kind of, whether they're American or wherever they're from, pick those up in terms of getting ready for the World Cup and making sure that there's people in place to be able to report on news as it happens, especially for TV viewers who need that kind of context. So, Kartik, I think that's a good discussion of our feature topic of the week. I want to remind listeners, too, that we definitely want to hear from you. So whether you agree with us, disagree with us, have any feedback or comments or questions about streaming, questions about television coverage, everything's wide open. We definitely would love to hear from you guys and to get the feedback. You can reach out to us through email. Our email address is web@worldsoccertalk.com. Twitter is WSoccerTalk. And Facebook is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can send us a message there. And Kartik, before we go, before we let you finish, any final thoughts or on this crazy world of soccer that we enjoy?
Yeah, it's just been the craziest week in U.S. soccer that I can remember with the U.S. women's national team, the Deloitte study on promotion and relegation, which we didn't get into, the continuing controversies over who's going to get the Division II sanction, NASL or USL. Obviously, this Chuck Blazer feature and USSF feature, which Brian Kumpel is going to be doing tonight, and we haven't seen it. Remind our listeners, we haven't seen it as we record this, and I'm sure there will be lots of commentary about that. And most notably, Jurgen Klinsmann sacking. So I don't remember a week quite like this where even though it was the middle of the European club season and I'm engaged in the Bundesliga and the Premier League and Serie A and what's going on over there, that I was much more focused on the U.S. scene in a long time, because there was just so much going on here.
Yeah, it's a crazy week, but actually perfect timing for the World Soccer Talk podcast to kind of dive deep into these topics. So I really enjoyed the time. Thank you, Kartik, and let me have you finish the show.
Enjoy your football.